Hi, this is Barry Liston, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. The attacks of September 11, 2001 focused Americans' attentions on air safety, but subsequent attacks on public transportation in cities like London, Madrid, and Mumbai gave some experts reason to wonder if major subway and rail systems are even more vulnerable. In today's segment, we speak with Arnold Barnett, the George Eastman Professor of Management Science at MIT's Sloan School of Management. Professor Barnett is an expert in air safety, but in a paper presented at the 2012 Informs Annual Meeting in Phoenix, he turned his attention to the rails. His paper is called, Has Terror Gone to Ground? We're recording today at that Phoenix conference. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And the one thing that came to mind is nobody seems to be talking very much about the threat of terrorism in the United States. Has the threat evaporated?
We never know, but it's hard to imagine that it's evaporated. You know, on September 10th, I remember we were having a meeting at MIT. We were having a conference on aviation in October, September 10th, 2001. And we decided not to have a session on aviation safety or security at that meeting because it didn't seem very much a current topic. This was a day before September 11, 2001. So in the same way, especially given what happened on 9/11, we never know whether the risk has evaporated. But I wouldn't use that word.
Or is it simply that the perception in the media is nothing's happening and therefore we're not talking about it as a nation?
Well, it's not that nothing's happening. It's that we've been quite successful, apparently, in thwarting what would have been potentially catastrophic plots. If you think about an aviation, for example, the shoe bomber or the underwear bomber or the liquid explosives plot, or the ink cartridge plot, all of those failed. Intelligence was sufficient that all of those failed, well, with the exception of the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber, where the technology failed them, the bombs didn't go off. Of course, on the other hand, I think that itself can be viewed as a success because given that we tightened up the more conventional ways of blowing up an airplane, they had to try more and more far-fetched means that were less likely to succeed. But we have had such plot. We had a plot against the New York subway where people were planning to go into mobbed subway trains at Grand Central and Times Square, suicide bombers, hoping to replicate what happened, for example, in London, but I assume they were hoping for much greater death tolls. This was stopped before the plotters got into the subway, a few days before. But so I wouldn't say that the threat has evaporated, but on the other hand, when there are no fatalities, and when it seems as if maybe we're getting things in hand, it may be quite natural for people to be less worried. You know, really, since 9/11, which is now over 11 years ago.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we really haven't had episodes of terror that succeeded in the United States. So I think it's quite natural that people not be thinking about it the same way they were 11 years ago in November 2001.
But of course, it's important that the Department of Homeland Security and researchers continue to be vigilant and prepare.
I believe so, because you have to remember the consequences of successful terrorism can be so great that the full magnitude of the event goes beyond the initial horror. You know, if 9/11 had been thwarted at the airport, that the box cutters had been taken away, who knows how the world would have been different now, how much would have been different, how many wars would have been averted. So I think clearly terrorism is a very important issue.
Now, your focus on terrorism in the past has been through your specialty on airline safety. What drew your attention to ground transportation?
You've already outlined it. One likes to think that he or she is responsive to facts and not an ideologue. I have for a long time worked in the area of aviation safety, and have said that even though obviously aviation was hardened after 9/11 in various ways, that that might, if anything, make it a more likely target, because the terrorists might think if they can defeat us, when we make our greatest effort to defeat them, the demoralization might be greater than anything else. But I couldn't help but notice, just as you said, there were terrible events in London, there are terrible events, you know, in Madrid, in Mumbai, that in fact, in terms of passenger death tolls, several of those events were comparable to 9/11. What made 9/11 singularly horrible was the deaths on the ground. But you had about 200 passengers killed then. You had 200 passengers killed at Mumbai and at Madrid. There was an arson attack on a South Korea subway that killed about 200 people. So I suspected, just listening to the news, that successful attacks seem to be occurring more against ground transportation, rail systems in particular, than against aviation. I thought one might as well look at the numbers. I mean, it's not that I was hypothesis testing, that I heard about atrocities against trains, and then I looked at the data to hypothesize there were atrocities against trains. I wasn't testing the hypothesis on the very data that generated. I just wanted to be more systematic in looking over the recent evidence.
And perhaps we could look at some of the things that you bring forward in your paper and in your research. You examine statistics about attacks on land and in the air during two periods. One is between 1982 and 1991. The second period is from 2002 to through last year. What did you find in each period, and how do they contrast?
Okay, well, actually, I, of course, considered the period in between also, 1992 to 2001, mm-hmm. So I considered 30 years. I think, though, that for a dramatic sense of what the shift was, that in the 1980s, going from 82 to 91, essentially, I counted, based on looking at all the sources I could find, 1,327 passengers were killed worldwide in aviation terrorism. This is only passengers. Mm-hmm. I went through these events and tried to distinguish passengers from other parties who suffered death. I couldn't find a single instance in that period of a terrorist attack or a mass criminal attack against a subway or commuter rail system. There were a small number against long-distance rail systems. If we then skip over to the last of those periods, namely the last decade, 2002 to 2011, we had only 203 fatalities worldwide in aviation associated with crime and terror. I don't mean to say only as if it doesn't matter, but we've gone down from 1327 to 203, about an 85% decline. By contrast, there were 804 deaths on subway commuter rails. So subway commuter rails have gone from zero to 804. So you had something of a displacement, actually. The two things added together were about 1,000 in both periods, and yet it was 100% aviation in the first and over about 80% mass transit in the second. And the number of events was not large, but it was enough that this trend was statistically significant.
And it shows that, I think, 8% of overall deaths for of overall death risk for air travel involved criminal and terrorist acts, as you said, but that for ground travel, the risk is 10 times as high. So what's going on? Why the vulnerability, the shift in vulnerability?
Okay, well, let me just explain what I meant by the statistic you just quoted. If my best guess, if you want to use recent data as a guide, is that an air traveler in the first world suffers some risk of dying in a criminal or terrorist attack, but that's only about 8% of the overall risk. The vast bulk is associated with accidents that may occur. It's a very low level of risk in any case, but the fraction of it associated with terrorism, about 1 in 12. By contrast, on mass transit, actual accidents are extremely rare in the developed world. There was only one, I believe, in Valencia, Spain. There was a subway accident that killed about 40 people in the past decade. But about 88% of the risk is tied to terror. So whereas only about a 1/12 of your risk on the airplane is tied to terror and criminal acts, 7/8 of your risk on the ground.
Can you give any examples of any specific attacks, and are these findings skewed by the major headline makers in London, Madrid?
Well, I don't know whether skewed is the word. There are many events. And one way of trying to avoid giving excessive weight to a particular event is simply to take the counts of how many fatal events occurred, so you don't weight them by the number killed. And even if you do that, you find a statistically significant shift. You know, one possibility, and again, we can only talk about possibilities, not certainties, is that the terrorists may be moving away from the air to the ground, the rail transportation systems. It's hard to imagine 9/11 itself could occur again. The reason is cockpits have been strengthened in lots of ways. We haven't had any repetition of 9/11. And more to the point, it seems as if the terrorists themselves seem to agree that that's not a fruitful venue for attack, because they have gone back to trying to blow up planes, which is what they did before 9/11.
The kinds of things that happened during the 1970s, for example.
The 70s and the 80s, yes. We had Pan Am 103. We had a large number of losses of planes associated with explosives. A TWA flight from, I believe it was Cairo to Athens, was blown up. It may have been Tel Aviv to Athens. Mm-hmm. But that was the old method of trying to get at airplanes, using explosives. And now it seems, if you look at the recent plots, the shoe bomber, underwear bomber, liquid explosive, ink cartridges, they're all attempts to blow up planes. So 9/11, horrific though it was, may have been something of a one-off. But on the other hand, we find the terrorists maybe getting, and this is again conjectural, maybe they're getting a little bit discouraged as they try again and again against aviation and fail. And yet, when you try against mass transit systems, rail, commuter rail, and subway, it seems they have succeeded when they've attempted it, and these attempts are hard to stop once they're in progress. You know, in the New York subway, you always see these posters, if you see something, say something. Well, I was on the Lexington Avenue subway in New York last week, and the train was jammed. Believe me, I didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say anything. I have no idea who was standing near me, let alone whether anyone might have some explosives attached to his or her waist. So you might say that the sense that the chance of success is greater on the ground may be leading to a certain displacement. That as you make aviation harder to attack successfully, then another venue, which can cause the same kind of horror because so many people commute, that when they sense that their day-to-day commutes are not safe, that there's a pervasive sense of worry. Maybe, but again, as you say, there are a limited number of events, and we don't know what they're really thinking.
Does this mean we should shift our security dollars away from airports?
Well, we can certainly have such a discussion. My sense, and people can obviously disagree with it, is that we shouldn't, because if the fact that these methods have succeeded, if that is the case, in displacing things, doesn't mean that if we stop the methods, that the terrorists would not be attracted back to aviation. You know, I remember I read an article once years ago, a silly article, where someone was saying that some of these burglary protection systems were not really necessary because the homes with them were not being burglarized. But of course, the fact that they weren't being burglarized might be a testimony to the success of the devices, not evidence that they weren't necessary.
You have to probe a little bit.
Yeah, so I would think that if, in fact, the terrorists think that aviation is less likely to be a venue of a successful attack, then that might be because of all of the new measures that take place at the airports, some of them obviously very annoying to us, but maybe the cumulative effect is to lessen the perceived probability of success enough that those who wish us ill are thinking elsewhere.
Let's shift just slightly. Your research contrasts the events of 9/11 with attacks on railways in South Korea, India, Spain. How do these two groups compare?
Well, they don't. They don't, in the sense that what makes 9/11 singularly horrible is the 2,700 plus deaths on the ground. None of these other events really caused substantial numbers of deaths on the ground. If they caused any, I'm not even sure whether or not, if you looked at the statistics, you could find people who were victims of the Madrid bombings who were not on the trains themselves. But if you believe that 9/11, the specifics, using the plane as a weapon, represents a horrible circumstance that is unlikely in itself to recur because of the strengthening of cockpits and awareness of the intent of such hijackers, then it seems to me the kinds of events we're talking about in aviation and in the mass transit systems are quite comparable. If you're successful in a given attack, you may kill a few hundred people, not that you'll kill a few thousand.
We only have time for a few more questions. And I guess I haven't asked the one thing that will weigh on my mind, on the mind of others. If I'm a subway rider in New York or on the T in Boston, how worried should I be based on your research?
Well, I don't think you should. I don't think it helps to be terribly worried, but let me be more precise. Statistically, if you commute for a year on a mass transit system in the United States or in Western Europe or Canada, Australia, then, or Japan for that matter, Japan has an enormous amount of rail transit, more than much of the rest of the world combined, actually. Your risk, at least the best I can make of recent statistics, your over the year is about twice as high as your risk in taking frequent flights in aviation. That the rail commuter is twice the risk of the frequent flyer. Now, that doesn't mean an individual trip is more dangerous. If you take the metro in Washington, D.C. to Reagan Airport, I'm not saying that your risk of being a victim of terrorism is greater on the metro than on the plane you take out of Reagan. However, don't forget a commuter takes something like 600 train rides a year, you know, 10 a week, 50 weeks, let's say, and some leisure trips. Whereas even a frequent flyer, and I went to the Air Transport Association for data, a frequent flyer takes about 20 one-way trips a year. So over the course of a year, the risk is about twice as high for the rail commuters as the frequent flyers. However, the magnitude of the risk is something like 1 in 2.5 million versus 1 in 5 million. And you might say, given all the risks we face, that's not very high. Of course, this is only based on recent data, sort of taking weighted averages over the last 20 years. And one thing we know is that assuming the future is just a continuation of the past might be a hazardous forecasting technique.
I guess that's always a danger in forecasting, that you're dealing with historical data, but there's a limit to what you can forecast, and things may change dramatically.
Absolutely a limit, but it seems to me, though, that, and again, this is just common sense, not any specialized wisdom on my part, that the best way to stop these plots, whether against aviation or against rail transit, is to catch the perpetrators before they make their attempts, which is why we were able to avert what might have been an horrific attack against the New York subway. And they seem to have been doing a fairly good job. It's the quiet, as you say, that may make us feel a bit complacent, but maybe we can get a bit complacent because so many people are doing such an outstanding job in protecting us.
So we've kind of concluded that as a subway rider, I don't need to be overly worried. Policymakers, should they be more concerned about rails and subways?
I think they need to be concerned because we know the ramifications of these acts when they're successful go well beyond the immediate tragedy. You know, if you look at it, we're now talking about the events in Benghazi when four Americans were killed, and there's a great deal of national attention to these events. But what would be the attention to events in which there were, let's say, simultaneous attacks on the subway systems of Chicago, Boston, and San Francisco with a cumulative death toll up in the many, many hundreds. That because of these ramifications, I think policymakers should be worried, because then they have to think what will happen if, in fact, such attacks are successful. And I'm not at all suggesting, by the way, that they are asleep at the wheel, asleep at the switch, whatever the cliche is. Mm-hmm. They are working. It seems as if they're succeeding. And I'm just saying that maybe rather than be worried on the subway, we should be thankful for those who are keeping our subway safe.
And I know that the New York City police are especially vigilant about terrorist attacks. And I assume that includes for the subway. And
they most certainly are. New York City has its own units associated with terrorism. And we have every reason to be very grateful to them. But you see, the problem with the subways is that even if you see policemen and police dogs, etc., in certain stations, I don't think it can necessarily offer protection against a terrorist act where there's some flexibility about where and when to attempt the attack.
Since there are so many more points of entry for potential terrorists.
And there are, and we can't possibly have a situation where people entering the subway have to take their shoes off.
Of course. Final question, do you have any recommendations to officials about additional things that they could do to improve security on railways and subways?
You know, I'm reminded of something that President Gerald Ford said when he was in the presidential debates, and we just heard one last night. He said at one point that he hoped the American people would say, "Jerry, you're doing a good job, keep right on doing it." Unfortunately, that was not the consensus he lost to Jimmy Carter that year. But if I were to say anything to the people who are trying to protect the subways now, it would be, you're doing a good job, just keep on doing it.
So at this point, remain vigilant and don't assume that because you've been successful that you should stop being vigilant.
Oh, certainly, yes. Vigilance has to be up. And again, if individuals have a role to play, in that it's not a matter of stopping the terrorist act on the subway when it's just about to occur, but if you hear anything about a potential plot, then if you let people know, that can help. There was an attempt against the New York subways years ago against the B train, and someone who had heard about the plot told the authorities in advance. So in this sense, if we see something, say something, not necessarily a package on the train, but I think The authorities need to be vigilant, and people need to be vigilant about such threats.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Arnold Barnett of MIT. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it was a great pleasure.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.